Cool. So, as you probably already know, we have a very, very special guest today. Needs no introduction. We've had him before, and it's always an absolute pleasure. So, Jason, I'm just going to put you up on the screen and welcome Jason Ritchie on board. Let me know how you are doing. Are you unmuted? Yeah, I think you
Yeah,
are.
hey, thanks, Tomlin. Yeah, thank you very much for having me. My pleasure to
Oh,
be here.
thank
And it's
I'm
land, they don't say Lancaster, PA, they say Lancaster.
Lancaster. Okay. All right. So you need to teach me about this stuff.
If you've ever seen the meat called scrapple, right? Well, it's a, I don't know if you even call it meat, but it's a conglomeration of meats.
Okay.
Charlie Parker wrote the song Scrapple from the Apple.
All right. This is some insider knowledge.
I happen to know some Lancaster trivia.
Nice. Okay, so Ellen is saying that she can hear me with an echo. Is that just you, Ellen, or is everyone else hearing me with an echo?
No echo here.
No echo. Cool. Awesome. That is great. All right. Should we just get started with questions, Jason? Are you ready?
I'm ready, babe.
All right. Okay, so first question is from Graham. Graham's saying, hi, Jason. First, I've got to say, I'm so happy you're even here given what happened recently. My question is your music influenced by your life, or is it more of an escape, maybe neither or both? I was thinking about this because much of people's music is about their life experiences, but I use learning harmonica to get away from a world that seems more and more crazy every day.
Yeah, wow, what a great question. Fantastic. So yeah, I think initially, like I started out on guitar, right? And the guitar was just completely a vehicle for writing songs. So like it was a way of for me expressing myself about like what I was going through. So initially it was the opposite of who asked that question again? Can you tell me? Was it Thomas or
It's Graham.
Graham, thanks, bro. Yeah, so yeah, Graham, like initially it was the opposite of what you are talking about. It was not an escape. It was a way to discuss or to express like emotions that I felt through that. And then I think, when I got into harmonica, it actually turned more into like what you're talking about. And where it was something I could do to kind of forget about stuff. But then pretty quickly, it became the same again. And I'm like, frankly, for better or for worse, and it's both sometimes incapable of separating my emotions from my playing, and a firm believer that art imitates life. And like I was just talking to Tomlin before we all got here about the shooting and about the new video I made on a new series I have called Talking Blues, where I discuss why I'm not leaving New Orleans after the shooting. But it's really not about that. It's about what's the sacrifices that we make for things that we care about, including music. So it's one big perfect circle at this point of both of those things. Thank you.
Awesome. Great answer. Okay. So, James has a lot of questions, which I've not actually read through. So let's see. So saying, Jason, thank you for being here today. You're an incredible inspiration, and not just because of the mastery you display on the harmonica, but because of your passion, positivity, and authenticity. Your spirit of generosity and love is heartfelt and very refreshing. Thank you for what you do and how you do it. It matters and makes a difference. So we've got a bunch of questions from James, which we'll go through and ask Jason if he can answer as many as possible. But I also want to let other people get in with their questions, so don't forget to type them in the chat. So the first question is, Joe Falisco swears by the train as being one of the single most important exercises harmonica players can practice. Do you have any go-to exercises that you could share and the reasons why you feel they're critical for developing solid musicianship skills?
Okay, real quickly, yeah. So yeah, I know Joe says that. He probably is on me for not talking about it more. Not probably. He is. He gives me a hard time about that. I do believe that that chugging and train exercises are really good for everything, for time, for tone, for air, recycling air, learning how to get rid of air, not into the harmonica, breathing exercises. I think that those train exercises can help any type of music that you're playing, whether it's jazz or blues or country or whatever. So I agree with Joe. I tend to go more like a traditional instrument where I practice a lot of arpeggio and scale work and rearranging those things. I like what it does to my brain mathematically. I'm not good at math. I never was good at math. I had a fear of math. And when people told me music was math, I got a fear of that. Over the years, I overcame that fear just by working and playing and realized it's really not math. It's just counting. 2-1-3-2-4-3-5-4. 3-2-1-4-3-2-5-4-3. And these different types of, like, so if you have five notes, right? Or let's just do the major scale, seven notes. Go up three. Start on the second note, go up three. Third note. So it's not
Jason.
Just,
yeah. Okay, sorry. Sorry to interrupt. You're in a great flow, but your harmonica
original sound. What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me fix that. All right. Let me see. Sorry. You want to talk for a second, Tomlin, while I figure this out?
All right. Well, I'm actually really excited about hearing Jason's exercises. I always thought it'd be cool to get together like all the great harmonica teachers and players and find out what the secret exercises that they've done a lot of to get like super badass.
Right.
Right. Jason, you good to go?
Yeah, I'm good to go. So, you know, it helps you to visualize the scale. Now you can apply this like technology to any group of notes. It doesn't have to be a scale. You could do it to an arpeggio or a lick. Well, you know, let's take a six chord. So it's, we've all heard this before. Right, now that's not just a song or a bass line or something that we hear from blues. Those are five notes of a chord. So when I'm soloing, I can use any five of those notes at any time. Right, so now if I'm wondering how I could get better at that, I can start rearranging those notes methodically. So instead of just going up and sequentially and down, I could start on the second note, go down to the first, the third, just 2-1-3-2-4-3, and then I can extend that to another octave. So if you're wondering how that could work musically, aside from just an exercise, I'll take three chords of a 1, 4, and 5, a blues progression. I'll use only six chords. So I'm disciplining myself to not play other notes that are not there. Not because there's anything wrong with them, just to see what I can do with just those. So, so right there, I have never played anything like that, exactly like that before. It's completely off the cuff. But how off the cuff is it? Not a lot, because there's an intellectual idea initially of I'm going to start rearranging stuff like this. And then along the way, I make mistakes. I don't execute exactly the way I thought I was. I get nervous in one spot. But that actually becomes inspirational. That interrupts the methodical process about a doo-doo-doo. So you don't know exactly what's going to happen. I'm not going... Right, you know, like that. It doesn't sound like an exercise. But when I'm at home, I want to practice it like an exercise. And then when I get to the gig, I just see what happens. Right? So I can do this with anything. Scales. So that's what I practice a lot, right? And then... I mean, other things too, but that's my go-to. Okay, so I know James had a lot of questions, right? What, it is James, right?
Yes.
Okay, because I thought I... Okay.
Right. That so, was good. That's good.
That was a long answer to the first question, so I'm
That was good. It was worth it. It was worth it. All right, so next question from James is, how do you approach memorizing a new song or piece, and is there one that you could recommend for a beginner?
For a beginner, Saints Go Marching In. All right, that's the first song I learned. What I do is I listen to the song all the way through, maybe a couple of times. I also try to think about what the song is about, right? So like, not just an intellectual dissection of the piece, but is it something I should play? Is it something I want to play, right? And then I learn a small section, like the first lick or so. And then I practice that by itself. Then I learn the next one. And then I practice the first one and the second one by itself. Then I learn the next one. And I learn that by itself. Then I learn the first, the second, and the third together. And I build and build and build. And I stack until the very end, when I can play the song all the way through. So I don't try to learn the whole piece. I learn little sections at a time and add them on. When I don't do that, I mess up. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. And Joe's, Joe's great is that it's exactly how I do it. And that's how I tell people to do it. So it's awesome that that you do the same. That makes me feel better. All right, next question. Any tips on learning to play by ear? And is there a process you could share?
The same one I just did, right? Like, learn it, memorize the first piece, then the first lick, then learn the second lick, and then see if you can play them together without the music, right? Like, you have to be able to play it without the music. Like, when we listen, like, say we're learning Juke, right? There's going to be little things in that song, like, that the drums do and the guitars do, that's going to cue you to remember what the next line is. Don't depend on that. Be able to play that without the music, right? And in tempo. It's incredibly important to be able to play alone. If you can't create an, you know, rhythm, melody, and harmony, which is all music is, right? If you can't do all that on your own, create it, right? You have to be able to at least hear it in your head. So you have to be able to play it alone.
Definitely. And I will just kind of bring people's attention to when Jason was showing us the exercises, the kind of three note exercises around the major scale and then the arpeggios. He had a really strong beat going. You were hitting the floor so hard, just because like you're really creating that, you know, that whole feel by yourself. And it's important to do that in practice. You know, I'm assuming you're imagining like a band or you know, that backing. You're creating the whole vibe in your head. Is that what happens?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I also practice with a metronome too, but I also use my foot, and my foot will frequently become off with the metronome, which is good. That shows me that I'm human and that I need work on it, and then I need to realign with it. But if I'm doing, you know, if we were playing classical music or any kind of music that changed tempo, I would advise against involving your body into it.
Mm-hmm.
But this type of music is very physical. And it's important. And, you know, I don't get many compliments from the musicians I play with, because they really don't care whether or not I'm a good harmonica player. Their question is, can you do the piece of music, right? But the one compliment I get frequently is on my time from drummers. So I think that is a testament to it, because I don't think I naturally had good time, right? I just had to involve myself year after year after year in the rhythm. And I also, you know, I've been playing a long time since before there was YouTube and stuff. So I didn't have backing tracks to work over. So I spent a lot of time just jamming with my foot, right? No guitar. I didn't have guitar players to hang out in my house and stuff, you know? Yeah.
Man, a time pre-YouTube. How did you cope?
It's arguable whether we're doing help here or not.
Yeah, that's a topic for another day. all right, so I think we should come back to James's questions in a little bit, because there are a few more, but I want to get to some other people's questions. There are like two or three questions just about how Jason's doing post-shooting and stuff. I'm sure you don't want to dwell massively on it, but just if you want to kind of tell us a little bit, like how everything's going and whatever you're comfortable sharing.
Okay, shoot. All right, so yeah, we're both doing good. Kate and I are okay. I recommend, for the long explanation of this, please watch my video. It's called Am I Leaving New Orleans?
And then I'll link it up.
It's from a new series, again, called Talking Blues. So I'm going to be doing, because I believe that art imitates life, I'm doing a new segment twice a month where I'm going to discuss things about life. Awesome. Gato, Lisa. Yeah. So there's a cat on the screen. So anyway, yeah, that's all. Okay. Sorry. Distracted by that. Yeah. So anyway, we're okay. We're okay. Look, long story short, okay, watch the video. We're used to it. That's all I can say, right? Like, not bullets coming through the house, but Kate and I are used to crazy situations, period. Right? We've just been around it our whole lives.
Cool. Sorry, thanks for sharing that. I'm just trying to get this video linked up. I can't get it linked up right now, but I'll link it up after the Q&A.
Appreciate
it. So people can watch it. No, thank you for sharing. I think that's awesome. Okay, let's see. Sorry, I'm just scooting through all the nice words. There are lots of nice words, but we want to get some questions. So Harry's saying, how do you make the percussive ch sound before notes, say, when you're playing a bass line?
Okay, cool. Great question. So... going back to Felisco's train thing, right? So when I was never really interested in train sounds and chugging and stuff, I always thought that sounded really like harmonica-y. And I wanted to play like a violin or a guitar. I didn't want to go, right? So, but I started getting into it because just so I could do it for audiences, right? So because they love that. They want to hear a harmonica. If you can't do a train and you're a harmonica player, you're going to disappoint at least one person tonight, right? At least, right? And if you can do it, maybe you can excite hundreds, right? You know, so why not? So I started learning it. And what I wanted to do when I learned it was I wanted to only be using the one chord, meaning one, two, three, and four draw on the inhale. So that when I soloed, there was no other chord I had to observe. So in order to do that, I had to exhale into the air. So anyway, I learned to get rid of note it rid of air without playing notes instead of. Now, if you listen to that, instead of like a line that goes, it goes. Okay, so it has a very interrupting. And you're also hearing another chord, whether you know it or not, you're hearing an implication of another chord really quickly. So I wanted just to play on that one, and I started exhaling into the air. Now that translated to me not playing on certain beats when, say, I was playing a shuffle. Right, so a lot of that is me exhaling the beat that I would like to play on, but I know that I don't want to. Or the beat that I want to play on, but the one that I know I wouldn't like to. So, so if I want to hit on the down of downbeat being two, for example, most players, when they do like a lick, will play like, let's take this lick. So when you hear most harmonica players play that at a gig, they play, right? So one of the other ways you could do that is hit on the downbeat, right? Because there's a shuffle drum goes one and two and three and four and one and two and three. So instead of going, you go, but ba-da-da. So a lot of what I'm doing when I exhale is observing the beat that I'm intuitively programming on, right? And I'm convinced, whether it was consciously or subconsciously, that Junior Wells, who made a lot of noises and stuff, was also doing the same thing. Right? So I'm playing on all the off beats, right? And so how am I doing that? Well, I'm keeping track of the on beats with these percussive things. And so that just seeped in over time. But it all started with the train. Hi, how are you? Right, just like that, right? So I'm just getting, I learned to exhale, and that just seeps into your playing. What it is it's one and two and three and four and one and two and three. That's what I'm doing. I'm counting. One and a two and a three and a four and a one and two and three and one and two and three and one and two and three and four. And the secondary purpose is I never run out of breath because I'm constantly reciting. That's secondary. That's the byproduct. The number one product is an increased sense of awareness of every single beat in four beats. One and a two and a three and a four and a, and beyond that, swing. Ahead of the beat, on the beat, behind the beat. That's where New Orleans comes in. That's what the other reason I'm not leaving here. That stuff's like Egyptian, like ley line electromagnetic energy weird. You have to be around it. You can't just listen to it on records. You gotta live it. It comes from believing you have to be below sea level.
Oh man, I love it. I love it. I'm interested though, because so when you're playing like that, obviously it makes it very obvious to someone who's listening where the beat is, and it creates that feel. Do you play as much as that if you have a big band behind you?
Yeah.
Does it kind of?
Yeah, you just don't hear it. as much.
Right.
But
Nice.
probably on a good night, Tomlin, yes. All right, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, but some nights I think I probably don't do enough of it. But
All right.
like when I'm you know, like with traditional blues, it happens a lot more than with jazz. Or soul jazz or the kind of New Orleans funk. But like when I play with Nick Moss, right, which is, you know, pretty frequently, like a few times a year whenever Dennis can't make it, and lots before Dennis got there, right? But like when I play with Nick, it's all night. I mean, all night, because I have to be involved in that drum beat. And because all the songs are so similar in their chord changes and stuff, I have to be rhythmically advanced to separate song from song. And it's not like I'm going to be playing in fourth and fifth and 12th position with Nick Moss. He wouldn't allow it. He wouldn't allow it. And there's no way. There's no way. He knows. If I started that stuff, he would stop me right away. He'd come over and be like, "Bruh, like leave that shit for Howard Levy, right? Like we're trying to play blues here, you know."
Nice. Cool. All right, Spencer wants to know, can you comment when slash how to use throat vibrato versus hand vibrato?
Okay. Well, I think they're both pretty, right? It depends on, you know, like I don't know. That's a great question. So like there maybe a good hand vibrato would be good if you haven't gotten a pitch vibrato for your bends, like take three double bend. Right? So if I want to hit that with just a regular vibrato, it doesn't really sound that good. So I could do a pitch vibrato, sort of like Howard, which sounds really good. Or like Big Walter Horton, like he would use a beautiful hand vibrato. And then that one sounds nice, right? So that if you're playing acoustically, that would be good. I also like, it sounds really good. I like the hand vibrato on chords a lot too. Right, now I think the important thing is the airtight seal, right? Like when you see hand vibrato on TV, it's exaggerated. Like that, you can hear that makes a difference, but not much, right? The real difference is this: Madison Slim, right, who played with Jimmy Rogers and Sam Lay and everybody. He told me, he goes, "This is how little Walter held the harmonica, right? So here's how I'm holding it, right? So look at that." So you for a class, I did a seminar in Argentina a couple months ago, and my wife came in the room and poured water into my hands, and I just sit there and held it, and there wasn't a drop, right? And then I just opened it up, and all the water fell out, right? That's what it should be, and then you get that. And it's important not just for wahs, as opposed to, right? It's completely different. It's almost amplified. Right. So then, anyway, and then throat vibrato, I think, it's better to know how to do it yourself. What if you get your hand chopped off, right? That could happen, right? So you want to be. Now, one of the things I like to do, which you can hear, is the vibrato doesn't always start immediately, right? I play the note first and then add the vibrato. Which is something I learned from Pat Ramsey. But if you listen to the majority of singers, like the real singers, like Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan and stuff, they do that too. They add the vibrato later. I find that vibrato, like any good thing that's overused, can become distracting from the entire performance when somebody is constantly. Immediately, all the time, it detracts. It detracts. Vibrato, like a pedal is an effect. It's an effect that's added to music. And like a pedal, you can usually turn it off. Now, if it takes so long to learn this vibrato and to get a good one, right, that what happens is it becomes harder to remove. And it also becomes subconscious. There's nothing wrong with any note in the world. There's nothing wrong with anything, right? Vibrato, any of that. The only thing that's wrong with it is when we're not in control of it, right? And then we can't turn it off or turn it on. Now, there's a lot of things in my music that are like that. And those are the things I'm working on.
Awesome. All right. So Marika has a question. Hi, Jason. Hope you're doing well. I know you mostly play your own music, but I have a question on cover songs and how you incorporate harmonic licks and solos into a non-harmonica song. When you play a cover song when the original doesn't have a harmonica in it, how do you approach that? And what would you say are the do's and don'ts? P.S. I recently found an Albert Collins cover from you with the Below Zero Blues Band of the song I Ain't Drunk. I used it as inspiration to play along with the song in my band. Really cool. Thank you for that.
Awesome. Yeah, that's an obscure video you found there from my Indiana days, right? Of just getting out of jail and trying to resurface into society, yeah, reacclimate. That's great. One of the things you can do, look at Christelle Berthon, right, on her YouTube channel. So she just takes the melody that the singer sang and just sort of rearranges it, Marika. All right, so that's super cool right there. So, if she's playing, she might play something like... Right? Or just little things like that so that you can do that and just sort of for the solos, or just listen to what any other instrument in the band is playing. What is the horn playing? What kind of solo did the guitar do? And can I imitate that? So there's that. The other thing you can do, which is a little bit more intellectual and more from a jazz point of view, not necessarily a jazz player, but the way a jazz player would do, is to look at the chords in the song and go, okay, well, what notes are in those chords? So anything that you play that's, a chord usually has three or four notes in it. So any of those four notes will be ideal. Any of them will be ideal to play on that particular chord change. You cannot do anything musically wrong. So I hope that helps. That's a great question, by the way. It's really a huge, giant rabbit hole of a question. That's what jazz is, what her question, right? It's not just for harmonica. I mean, it's how do I play, right? Right? Like, how do I come up with something, right? Right? That, like, if I don't have another instrument, right? Well, I mean, that's what the study of music is for. The instrument itself is irrelevant. If I couldn't play tomorrow, I could take my knowledge of this instrument, and it would take me a little while to physically learn like piano or physically learn better guitar. But I could take the knowledge that I have in within a year or so, I would be a far superior guitar player than most people in a year or two. Because it's not about the physical action of playing, it's about the knowledge of understanding of music. It just needs Absolutely. To be applied to that instrument.
Right, Jerry wants to add to Marika's question. He's saying, my wife and I play ukulele and harmonica duets. She likes to play some cover songs like Hotel California in the key of A. I'd like to stick in some fill-in riffs. What key would you recommend for this? A or D or something else? And do you have any suggestions on when to do the fills?
I try not to step on the vocals when I do fills. I would probably play that one in third position. I would learn it in third because I'm pretty sure that song's almost entirely full of minor chords. So it would be easier to do it in third than it would in second. The misconception with learning new positions is that they're harder. Okay, actually the reason that we're learning positions is it helps make certain things easier or sound better. Now, so sometimes playing it in another position may actually sometimes be harder But in the long run, as it sounds better. So the short run is it's hard at first, but then it sounds so good that the reward is that you start getting better at the position because it's enjoyable to you to hear once you get past that awkward initial hump. Third position is a great position for playing in minor music. Now, the misconception is that it is only for minor music. That's not true. Any position can play major or minor. Any position can play any scale if you're good enough, right? If you know what that scale is and how it works. So, but third would be a great position for, I would think, for Hotel California. Now, if you wanted to play it in cross two, there'd be absolutely nothing wrong with that. You would just have to really, really be conscious of making sure that the three draw was bent a half step on all of those minor chords. So that note is a third that has been flatted. But when we're in a minor key, we call it a minor third. The reason that we call it that, even though a minor third and a flat third are the same thing, are you nitpicking by calling it a minor third when it's just a third that's been flatted, a flat third? No, I'm not. I'm not nitpicking, and neither were the people that created that term. It's a minor third because it must be flatted. It is the note that makes the song minor. So if you cannot play well or fast, or you're afraid that you're going to pass by that note and hit it unbent, then third position is an easier position for you. So I often choose third position when playing in minor songs because even though some of the licks may be harder to figure out, it is much easier to have the minor third is already tuned there as a five draw and a nine draw, and then down bottom it's a two double bent. So you don't have to worry about going any further. So like take for example the song Summertime in third, right? So if I'm the opening lick is a fifth note and the minor third in the fifth, or a six draw, five draw, six draw. And then it hits it again on the way down. So now, if I wanted to play that in second position, I would have to make sure the three draw was bent all the time. Which isn't real hard, but when I'm improvising, it's awkward. It's awkward, right? It's much easier to go through the initial pain of playing in an awkward position. To have that beautiful, because right here, you see four draw, five draw, and six draw. That's what you call a minor triad. There's the chord. So it's super, super easy. So yeah, third position, Hotel California, all day. Give it a shot.
Nice. I think that's a great answer. I just want to really draw people's attention to something you said towards the beginning of your answer, Jason, because people always get this wrong, and it bears repeating. Positions aren't major or minor. You can play in any scale, major or minor, in any position if you have the skills. So that's not the way to think of them.
Right. I mean, but part of the problem is it's not all their fault for thinking that. There's actual printed information. I mean, I'm pretty sure that the Lee Oscar harmonica comes with a booklet that tells you that third position is minor, right? Like, I mean, it tells you, right? So, and I've had people, like students in classes, like in large classes, hold up that booklet and tell me I'm wrong. And then I literally will play them a major scale in third position. And they're like, yeah, but third position's minor. But I just played you a mate. No, it's minor because I can't be right, right? Even if I can show you, because it's in print, so it must be true, right? And there's a million. If you Google third position, a million things are gonna come up that are gonna tell you that it's minor. It's just a good position for playing in mind. Yeah. That's all it is. Yeah, right.
Absolutely. All right. I'm excited about this question. It's not at all harmonica related. I don't know if it's going to be a question that's, I don't know how into this stuff you are. What coffee are you drinking and how did you brew it?
Ah, my man. All right. So it's a New Orleans blend. Okay. It's got it. It's from, the company is called Community. It's brewed right down the street. You can almost never smell it unless the wind blows a certain way. I think I've lived here in this house 7 years. I've only smelled the coffee brewing once. By right down the street, I mean about a mile and a half. It's good. It's very good coffee. It has a little trumpet on the, there's Community Coffee. Coffee's big in New Orleans. Like in the South in general, coffee is not big. It's not a big thing, right? Like it took us forever to get interested in having Starbuckses. Even in big cities, right? People just weren't into coffee. I don't know why. Like they drank it, but they drank Folgers. But in New Orleans, coffee has always been a big deal. Our most famous coffee has chicory in it, which was like a root that they crushed up and they put in the coffee, like the same way drug dealers will step on cocaine, right? They'll put other stuff in it to make it bigger and make more money. They put chicory in the coffee and they gave the slaves the chicory coffee. Now the chicory coffee costs more than the regular coffee, right? But that's another thing, right? But people also send me coffee, which is awesome. I have several friends that brew coffee. My wife's favorite is Storm Cat coffee, which is very expensive, of course. Yeah.
Awesome. I'm a huge coffee nut, so I love this stuff.
That's cool, because in England, right, everyone's tea. So
yeah,
that's
man, like,
yeah, my man, bro. You know what's up.
Dude,
you know,
dude, yeah. I have an espresso machine. I have a grinder. I do French press. Yeah. I do stoved. I do it all.
Right. Now, how did I brew it? Unfortunately, I used an electric coffee maker today, right? But yeah, I have a Mokan that that's I use okay. sometimes, right, for nice, espresso. Nice. But yeah, I want to get a French press again. I haven't had one in a while.
Nice. Awesome. All right. So next question. I love this. This is awesome, James. James is asking a strange question, but if Gonzo from The Muppet Show was a harmonica player, which harmonica player would he be in real life? Asking because I'm getting ink of Gonzo playing harmonica very soon.
which harmonica player would he be in real life? I think maybe Will Scarlet, you know. Maybe be Will Scarlet. If you don't know who Will Scarlet is, he was a harmonica player from Hot Tuna and is largely credited with being the first real overblower, even before Howard.
Okay. Very cool. all right. So
I'm not going to let my hair make me Gonzo just because I...
All right. Next question is from Jimmy. Jimmy's saying, our Tomlin's harmonica community is sadly predominantly white, mainly male, and mainly not young. Do you know what? I gotta contradict you, Jimmy. I thought that, and then I started looking at the analytics, and there are a lot more young and a lot more female players in our community than we actually realize. Not enough, but definitely a lot more. I'm getting some thumbs up from Marika and Lise. I can't see everyone. I've only got a few screens up on my gallery, but we're not just male and old. There's definitely quite a lot of that. Jimmy's saying, I'm sometimes saddened by the reality that what, at least in the States, the music that was created by Black people has evolved this way. What are your thoughts? Any efforts to reach out to prospective Black players?
Well, first of all, it is getting better. Okay. There are more women and young women and young men playing harmonica. That's good. I think social media has helped that. People tend to gravitate naturally. It's not racist towards people that look like them. It's an innate human thing to do. Animals do the same thing. So on this on the subject of black musicians not gravitating towards blues, well, that's a complex and a loaded question. So first of all, from what I can understand, black music and blues was originally a rebel music. It was a way of communicating things, both political, sexual, things having to do with drugs, and other things, even homosexuality. If we go back to the early 20s and 30s, there's songs that reference these subjects in sort of code, in double entendre, ways of getting the message out to the community through art, okay, and some of it's satirical and stuff. Well, that hasn't changed. However, black people have changed the type of music that they use to express that. So it's moved from blues and into jazz and into hip hop and beyond. Okay, neo soul, R&B, right? So black people have not stopped expressing it. They just haven't attached themselves to what I think we would look at as a genre, right? Now, I think it's important that we look at this question too of blues, okay? I think it's important that we ask ourselves how many black musicians defined themselves as blues musicians. The answer is not many. And how many black musicians concerned themselves with recording music that maybe isn't something that white people would refer to as blues? Big Walter Horton covering La Cucaracha. Many examples of this throughout history. Okay, and the music continued to evolve. When we listen to Cotton in the 70s with the big band, it's highly funk infused. When we listen to Freddie King, okay, on albums like Burglar and the songs of off of Going Down, it's highly rock infused. Okay, the music has been evolving, but white people tend to define blues as a 5-year period, mainly Chess Records of okay, you know T-Bone Walker and Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf and Little Walter, and that's traditional blues. Well, there is I've been around black culture my entire life, and I have never heard ever one black musician ever used the term traditional blues. And blues has also continued to evolve in the South. And what people may not understand that have never been to the South or really lived in the South is that there are blues festivals here that are entirely black, with entirely black audiences and entirely black performers. That places like the Blues Foundation and other blues institutions don't even acknowledge. So white people don't even have any knowledge that these blues festivals are even happening. Now, this type of blues falls under the heading of what black people now call soul blues. And some of this music is very offensive to white people because it's highly sexual in nature, and sometimes it has drum machines on it and synthesizers that do horn parts. And white people don't like that, and white people are the ones saying it's not blues. When black people are like, "Hey man, this is the blues that we play," right? Like, soul blues, you call, like Sonny Boy said, you name it your mammy if you want to. Right? So blues is continuing. There is black blues festivals, people just don't realize. Yes, that's delegated mostly to the South. Well, this is where we have a high concentration of black people that get together, live together, play together, and have roots, both genetic and familiar, to the families of the original, matriarchs and men that created blues music. They are related or know somebody that's related to Coco Taylor that came from the South, or to Fred McDowell. When you go to Mississippi and like I did, and you live with Junior Kimbrough and R.L. Burnside, you find out very quickly that R.L. Burnside's children are engaging in sexual activity and marriage with Kimbrough's, and that Kimbrough's knew members of John Lee Hooker's family, and John Lee Hooker's family knew members of in both, you know, biblically knew and also regular know members of Fred McDowell's family and Sunhouse's family. It's a community. It's a community, and it still exists. How do we get Black people from other places interested in blues? Be authentic. Be authentic. Don't try to be anything you're not, and communicate timely messages that are personal to you. That's how you reach not just Black people, but anybody in a way that lasts and matters. Anybody can play their instrument, but when you start putting on a costume, figuratively or literally, you are going to alienate people from an emotional connection. It might be visually exciting to look at, and it might sound good, but is it real? Is it real? Would you put this music on after your father died? That's the question.
Awesome. I don't have a lot to add to that, but John has said, for Jimmy and others, in response to your question, I heartily recommend Adam Gussow's book, Who's Blues? If you want to dig deeper in the topic you mentioned, it's a very serious academic text. I will need to check that out as well. Okay, so John also had a question, which was, Jason, good to see you here. You get fantastic tone and expression out of the bends on the three hole. Is there anything going on there that you can share to start other harmonicas on developing their own style? Meow.
Meow. Meow. Yeah. No, so I got that from Howard, from the pitch vibrato. So harmonica is not the only instrument that has problems with intonation. Okay. A violin neck is like this long. Okay. And it has four octaves in it. Okay. A trombone is very hard to play in tune. If you look at an instrument that's almost impossible to play in tune, like the theremin, if you're familiar with that, it's an electric, you know, that it's nearly impossible to play that in tune, or the saw, where people bow an actual saw, right? How do those artists do that? Well, they use excessive amounts of vibrato to cover up the intonation issues. Right? So that it's very hard for them to play somewhere over the rainbow, right? Very hard for them to do that in tune. So harmonica, like a lot of instruments, trumpet too, okay? It can be challenging to hit certain notes in tune. So having a good pitch vibrato will give you confidence, at least initially. So what I'm doing is I'm hitting a little below the actual pitch, because here's the hard part about three draw, right? Three draw double bend in particular. You have one bend below it, and then one bend below the actual pitch you want to hit. So I'm skipping the one in the middle. Here's all the notes, including three draw. Now, what makes it even harder is that those are just notes that we have names for in the West. But in the East, there's much more, many more notes. So here's the notes that we call notes on three draw. Here's actually a bunch of notes that are there. How many was that? Like eight? So now, whether you know that or not, you can feel that. Everybody in here can hear that there's all those pitches. So it's extremely intimidating to try to hit. How did I do that, right? So what I did is I learned to fake it. with this jaw vibrato where I'm saying, yeah. And I'm playing a little bit below the pitch and a little bit above the pitch, and I'm going through the pitch in the middle. Now, the other cool thing is I can control the speed very easily, much easier than I can control the speed of breath. The other thing is it's teaching me where a little too much is and where a little above too much is. So I'm learning initially what starts as a hack, so to speak, to coin the kids these days, what starts as a hack ends up teaching me where the real pitch is. And then I can put it on later. Right?
Awesome. Right. I think we should probably think about wrapping things up because we're closing in on the hour. Let's maybe do one more question. Right. So next question. And we have so many questions, Jason, that you're just going to have to come back. You're just going to have to come back. I'm sorry. okay, so Mark's saying, glad you and Caitlin are okay after your house got shut up. Apart from making your harps look good, what changes, if any, do you make to them? I prefer the Special 20 cover plates, but like rocket combs. Do you ever mix and match? And does your harp wire still work with the new side vents?
Well, we'll find out today. But like the question is we don't have one that doesn't have the hole in it to compare it to. So we'll have to see if it sounds any different. I do like the closed covers. So I put those on the Marine Band Deluxe, right? Now I'm not offended by Special 20s or rocket harmonicas, but I don't like the protruding, I don't like the recessed reeds, the reeds that fit in there. Now, while they're very convenient and very airtight, and why it is the harmonica that I will recommend to it, if somebody asks what harmonica should I get for the first time, I'm going to say a rocket or a Special 20 because it's very comfortable to play and the plastic and all of that. However, even though it's only a millimeter, it's a millimeter of me being farther away from the reed. And I can feel that. The recessed cover plate removes me that much further. Now, I know that seems nitpicky, but I've heard other people, independent of me mentioning this, say it's strange. It's one of the reasons the chromatic is strange, is it has that mouthpiece. That's you're farther away from the reed. So I prefer the sandwich style harmonica, whether that be a Marine Band or a Marine Band Deluxe or a Manji or some other kind of instrument like that. I prefer that. I do like the closed covers. I find them to be a little bit more worn. So if I were to play, here's a regular Marine Band in C. Right now, I have to play the same thing with the closed covers. There it is. It sounds a little more compressed. And now I have noticed with the closed covers that if you grip too tight and you blow too hard, the air doesn't escape, and that can choke the reed out where it doesn't play at all. So it does make a huge difference, right? So you have to change the way you play a little. I think Howard is the one I got this idea from, and I've been having harps made like this for years for me. Ever since then, like 17 or 18 years now or something like that. Joe Spires made the first ones for me. Now Tom does. Now, Halcheck. And I work on it myself too. If one of those guys is busy, I can make a heart for myself that I like as much as those guys.
Nice. Awesome. Thank you so much, Jason. This as always has been an absolute pleasure. I'm going to be going back through a bunch of the stuff that you've been talking about and adding it to my my practice. I'm sure other people will be as well. So many people have said thank you, and they're huge fans, and really, really pleased that you were here today. Is there anything that you want to tell us about? Anything you want to plug? Any new music or any tuition stuff, or yeah, anything at all?
Sure, man. First of all, I just want to thank you, Tomlin, and you do an exceptional job. You're an incredible personality and like one of the most like welcoming people. I mean, I know that if I was just getting on YouTube and playing and interested in harmonica, I would certainly gravitate towards you before I would me. My YouTube channel and all that stuff, which is, here's my plug for my YouTube channel, is very specialized and highly cultural, right? And highly personally influenced. And I've tried to mellow that out a little bit, you know, in modeling after you, where I'm just trying, you know, trying to make my stuff a little bit more accessible, right? But initially I came into YouTube thinking, well, you know, there were a lot of beginner videos already, so let me make some videos that are in intermediate. And I wanted to do that, and I wanted to appeal to a very small section. Now, just like my shows, right? I don't have shows full of thousands of people most nights, right? But I have hundreds of people that will drive 7 or 8 hours just to come see me, right? So I have a very loyal fan base, okay? That's what I'm after, and I know that's, I'm not going to please everybody, but let me just say, if anybody pleases anybody, Tom, or comes close to pleasing everybody, it's you. You're a very well balanced individual. I think you're an exceptional teacher. I love your videos. I love watching them, and I love your disposition. And I think you're absolutely hilarious too when you let loose a little bit. And I look forward to doing another one of those things that we did with Adam and Ronnie. I think that would be fun, right? But anyway, yeah, plugging anything. I got a new record coming out on Gulf Coast Records. You can vote for me for Harmonica Player of the Year. I know I won it last year, but I also deserve it again. The awards really do help people. And the money that it costs $25 to sign up. The money that you spend goes into the Blues Foundation, which doesn't just help music, it helps musicians. They have a Music Cares is a program that where some of the money goes to, and the Heart Foundation, and those organizations help musicians that have lost their homes. They put me through rehab twice. Okay, they were there when I had my tumor in my head just 3 years ago and had to have that removed. They've helped countless friends of mine. They helped people throughout the pandemic. So, you know, you're not just giving $25 to vote or to get a t-shirt or a coffee mug or whatever you get with the $25. You're really, really supporting a community of musicians. And as musicians, as full-time musicians, especially musicians from the United States, we have no healthcare, zero. So when something happens, we really depend on the community to come together. So I think it's an excellent organization. So whether you vote for me or for my boy, Dennis Grinling, or who I think really deserves it this year, if I'm being honest, is Billy Branch, right? You know, we talk about a lifetime of dedication to this music and having really been part of original, you know, black culture in Chicago. That was part of, you know, was really one of the first cats, you know, after Junior Wells, after those cats to come out. He was a young man when those guys were starting to wind down a little bit, but he's been carrying the torch for a really long time. I think he's an underrated player. So if you don't vote for me, you should definitely vote for Billy. But all John Namath too, who also is a really wonderful player, and Bob Corritore too. So they're all great company. But anyway, yeah, I got a new record called City Country City. It's the first record ever that is an organ trio with diatonic harmonica. So it's just organ and drums and myself, and we play New Orleans funk, soul jazz, and a little bit of blues. It's the record I'm most proud of. I think it's very sincere. And it's also a departure from my other records where there's no swear words and not every song is about drugs and the devil, right? So that's good. Actually, none of them are.
What?
I did it. And my next well record's done. My next record's gonna be really positive, you know, like, yeah. But yeah.
Nice. Okay, well, so I have, well, thank you so much for your extremely kind words, Jason. I appreciate that. I gotta say, I mean, like, when I was a beginner, I did gravitate towards you on YouTube, you and Adam. So you definitely hooked me in early.
Well, I was like, because it was like only me and Adam up there.
Well, yeah, that helped. okay, so I have linked up your YouTube channel, your Patreon, because loads of people mentioned it. I know you didn't mention it, but
yeah.
you should definitely talk about that. Also, I've linked up the Blues Music Awards and City Country City. Do you want to have just a quick word about the Patreon and then we'll call it a day?
Absolutely. So it's changed my life musically. I don't have to take every gig now. I can pick the gigs that I want to pick. So Patreon, I don't have a tier level. I know that you have advised me to create that, right, for potentially more income. Here's the thing. I want it to be accessible to everybody. I put my content as free on YouTube. There's no obligation to go to Patreon. If you feel the need to support me, go over there. That's $1 a month. It's as low as 25 cents a lesson. But here's what else is happening, okay? Over there, you're getting a lot more vlogging. So it's behind the scenes and it's about me. And a lot of this stuff is my opinions on music. Now, Tomlin, I told you that I'm trying to make my YouTube channel more like yours. That's true. But to the very first question that was asked to me by Graham, right, is I answered it. I said, I have an inability to not become emotionally involved. So I do my YouTube videos and I try to not get too emotionally involved in my lessons. And then over on Patreon, I let it go. So I don't care if people leave, right? Like good, go, right? But there's, you know, I don't have a lot of secret lessons or paywall lessons over there. I'll be in the middle of a long discussion about whatever, right? About drugs or about recovery or spirituality or the lack of. And then I might all of a sudden start talking about the Dorian mode and an unedited hour long vlog, right? So that's what you're getting over at Patreon is the uncensored, for the most part, uncensored Jason, right? The only person who gets the truly uncensored Jason is unfortunately my wife, right? Who has to deal with this all the damn time, right? So, but anyway, that's it. So it's a wonderful place. You're supporting me and you're also giving $1 a month. You're also supporting the videos happening for people that don't have a dollar a month or who might just wander on the video. And because without Patreon and stuff, honestly, I wouldn't be motivated to do that every week. I'm not making enough money from Google AdSense, the ads that you see on the videos, to justify putting in 8 to 12 hours of work a week into YouTube, which is about what I do, 8 to 12 hours a week minimum. Sometimes it's 30, right? Just into one video or a video and a vlog or a video and a whatever, right? So yeah, so Patreon helps tremendously. It's also a nice little community. My Patreon patrons have this amazing thing has happened where they've started to become friends. And they've started to communicate and get each other's phone numbers and Skype and stuff like that and are communicating and getting ideas. And also, if you want to talk to me directly, you have a much better chance by dropping a message in the inbox than you do by hitting me on Facebook Messenger, which I'm no longer using anymore.
Awesome. Cool. Well, that is linked up below. Go check it out. Go vote in the Blues Music Awards. And Jason, I look forward to the next time. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you, everybody.
See you soon.
Everybody who came.
All right.
Thank you very, very much. Yes. Great questions.
Excellent. All right. Take it easy, everybody. Happy harping. See you next time.